The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
It becomes ever more clear why Mencken said democracy is the art of running the circus from the monkey cage. A new Iranian president was inaugurated just a few days ago, Hassan Rouhani. He campaigned as a reformer. His stated objective is reconciliation with the rest of the world and an end to sanctions. And incidentally, Iranian oil returning to the world market, from which we would all benefit. Even so, the U.S. House of Representatives voted to welcome the new Iranian president and his overtures by voting 400-20 to tighten the sanctions against Iran. But while congressmen beat their chests, the U.S. military is very skeptical about war with Iran, and Defense Secretary Hagel is looking at competing plans for inevitable cuts in the military. We'll talk with Ron Paul about Iran and America's interventionist foreign policy right after this.
I'm Ron Paul. I'd like to thank our sponsors. Their support makes these conversations possible.
America is becoming a police state. The NSA collects billions of our phone calls and emails. Homeland Security is buying 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition. How do you get through these times safely and with your wealth intact? I'm Charles Goyette from Ron Paul's America. I've created a powerful new video on the current state of our freedom and prosperity. 4 steps you need to take right now to survive and prosper. For more, go to crisis27.com. That's crisis27.com. It's hard to find a lot of Americans, apart from Lindsey Graham, John McCain, and all their fellow neocons, eager to go to war with Syria. And now it looks like the lid is about to blow off the Benghazi story. If it turns out, as many have long suspected, that Benghazi was a CIA operation involved in running guns to Al-Qaeda affiliates in Syria, and that the late Ambassador Stevens was involved, and therefore in violation of international law, we'll have the biggest weapons scandal since Iran-Contra. That would tilt the debate decisively against intervention, wouldn't it, Dr. Paul?
Well, let's hope so. But sometimes I get discouraged to think that people refuse to wake up. Actually, nobody should be surprised that the CIA was in Benghazi. You know, for a long time, I think most informed Americans knew that our embassies are used as CIA posts, and it goes on all the time. This gets a little more complicated, a little bit more involved when we participate in the overthrow of a government, once we supported in Libya, and then use the CIA to get involved. I mean, what in the world were we doing there? And now it looks like they were very much involved, not in just the routine spying and maneuvering and manipulating elections, but actually doing a bold step and funneling weapons into the anti-Assad people rebelling up in Syria. Oh, yeah, well, we're against Assad now, so why don't we help the rebels? And rebels, just because they're Al-Qaeda, we're not going to bother. I mean, what are we doing, even in Afghanistan? We assist the Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. These aren't completely off the wall knowledge. People know about this. Yes, it goes on and on and on. But, you know, it's not like this is something brand new. We've been following this foreign policy for a long time, and it's deeply flawed. It's gotten us into too many wars. It's breaking the bank. And my biggest concern about it is how many enemies we make around the world. You know, just now, as they're calling for a sensible foreign policy, we find out that on a daily basis, we continue to drop these drones. Then we wonder why they're threatening us. And of course, they were closing down all the embassies. Well, if they know something's going on, why didn't they know something was going on in Benghazi? Why didn't they close that one down? Why were they even there? So this whole idea that they're closing down dozens and dozens of embassies on the very same week that we were bombing and killing people in Yemen, it makes no sense. And we've been involved, of course, in Iran for a lot of years. I mean, it's not like it just since Obama has been president or Bush has been president or we've had these Persian Gulf wars. But matter of fact, it really started with what was going on those many years ago when Eisenhower was president. And we made sure that we put out of office, ran him out of town, an elected leader, and then installed the Shah. You know, I heard one of the most absurd stories the other day. They were explaining, I guess from the left or from some mysterious place, why the Iranians have a right to hate us. And the reason was that we didn't give him hospital care in this country as he was dying and the Ayatollah had taken over that country. So we propped him up for all those years, and then for political reasons, the United States decided, well, it was just too hot. But to say that that is the problem, that we didn't take care of him, how many billions and billions of dollars did we use to prop him up and take the oil from the Iranians? And that's the real reason they get pretty much annoyed with us. But, you know, with the new president, it's really an opening. Why can't we just say, hey, maybe there is a difference. Why should we close them out? Why should we meet an offer and just turn it into something of more hate and say, we will punish you, which means they're going to punish the people. One thing a lot of people don't know about, and they should know about, because the Iranians actually offered an olive branch after 9/11 because they don't like the al-Qaeda. There's no al-Qaeda running around Iran. So they offered an olive branch for them to help, you know, capture some of these people if we worked with them. We refuse to even talk to them. So I think this is so absurd. It's an obsession. It makes no sense. I just am so disappointed that they're going to pass up this opportunity. But if the revelation of what has been going on in Benghazi and a few more revelations of NSA and how out of control our government is, maybe the American people will say, hey, you know, maybe those guys that talk about non-intervention, the Constitution, and offer friendship and trade, maybe they have a point. I mean, we're not getting anywhere. And our military says, don't be foolish. Don't go to war against Iran. We don't have the facilities. We don't have the equipment. We don't have the money. So we're getting down to the rock and hard place. You know, we'll have to make a decision. And for me, it would be a very easy decision. Talk to people and try to open up the doors of friendship. And people say, oh, no, he's a really bad guy. Ahmadinejad is not there right now. Why not open up their minds a little bit? When you think of the people we have talked to over the last 50 and 60 years, just think we were allies with Stalin and Mao Zedong. We worked with these people to try to, you know, at least get along. And lo and behold, when we talk to these people, much more ruthless than the Iranians. The Iranians aren't a threat to anybody. They're not about to invade anybody. There's no record in the last couple hundred years that they've invaded anybody. So why this has happened becomes a little bit mysterious, but it's almost like an obsession. And when you can only get 20 people that vote for common sense on this, then you have to realize there are some powerful interests behind this whole thing, whether it's the oil companies or who knows what. But I do believe so sincerely that that whole region would be better off with one major change in policy. Just bring our troops home, mind our own business, treat people in a decent manner, trade with people. Their imperfections are their business. Our imperfections are ours. We shouldn't be lecturing other countries about violations of civil liberties. And look at our violation of our people's civil liberties and the trials we give people who are whistleblowers and the way we treat people in Guantanamo. But everybody said, Ron, you can't say that. You can't say that. That's not good. That's being anti-American. You got to be a good patriot. But I've learned over the years that if you truly want to be a patriot and defend liberty, you have to challenge the government when they're abusing our liberties and creating policies that lead to war and poverty. And that is where we are today. So as difficult as it is, and as much as mess that we have, I see today's conditions as an opportunity for us. And I hope we can wake up a lot of people.
When we continue in a moment, Ron Paul, the weekly podcast, I want to ask Dr. Paul about one of the objections that the permanent party in Washington, the war party that voted 400-20 to tighten the screws on Iran, one of the objections they make to dealing with overtures from the new president. We'll talk about that in a moment.
Laura Ingraham is the number one woman in talk radio, and now podcasts, too.
Two kinds of middle-class Americans are struggling today. People who can't find any work and full-timers who can't seem to get ahead. Bad economies are bad for the family.
Laura Ingraham.
So they're going to limit our gun purchases. And what are we going to give the little boys to play with? Well, dresses.
Get your daily dose of Laura Extra at podcastone.com.
This is Ron Paul, the weekly podcast. Dr. Paul, I've heard it said in Washington that we shouldn't take advantage of the overtures from the reformer Rouhani. We shouldn't take these overtures seriously since he's not really the power, that there's another power behind the throne. Somebody at the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity said, yes, that may be true, but they didn't make that same point when Ahmadinejad was president.
Right. No, they changed their mind. But, you know, it makes me think about sometimes people will say, well, you know, our presidents really aren't all that powerful. It's that establishment behind them, you know, the neocon philosophers, the people who are in the media who pump up this war. There's always somebody philosophically behind a token leader. So, yes, I think that there may be, there definitely is an influence. There was a lot less influence before we got involved. Matter of fact, we incited the radicalism after we threw out their leader Mossadegh in 1953. That was the incentive to radicalize Islam. Islam isn't automatic and like this every place. It has to have an incentive to build these hatreds and willing for people to commit suicide and al-Qaeda to develop. I think that if we change that policy and recognize, yes, there is influence over and above and outside the immediate political leaders, just as it is in every country, and our country is certainly so, because a lot of times when people ask me, who is it that you're running against? Who's the individual? Who's the politician in Washington you dislike most? And I usually say it's Keynes, you know, the economist, because as Nixon said, we all follow Keynesianism now. So, yes, we follow the pragmatists, the neoconservatives. There's a bunch of them. They're philosophic believers, and they think we should be involved. They believe they're what a lot of people call neo-Jacobins, you know, the French people who said that we are right and righteous, and you do it our way or we'll cut off your head. And forced to promote goodness doesn't work. And I think that is so often why people get sucked into this. They get to thinking, this is well-intentioned, and I do want to promote these things, but they don't stop when they're supposed to, and that is where the libertarians stop. Yes, you should work to influence people, but you should never use, and you do not have authority, to use violence to force your way on other people.
And that's a perfect point to wrap up. Thank you, Dr. Paul. Another great conversation and podcast. More great insights. Ron Paul, the weekly podcast. I'm Charles Goyette.
This concludes another PodcastOne.com program.